League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right. Last week, I'd been saying that the Astros offense still good enough to win a World Series. So when the Astros went off offensively on Friday against the White Sox, managed by Tony La Russa, which looks like he belongs in that movie, The Irishman. He would have been a spitting image of the fellas in that one. Anyways, I tweeted out. I said the Astros offense isn't good enough to win a World Series, slash S, which of course means sarcasm out on the streets. Granato responded to me. He disagrees. He thinks that the Astros must be better offensively, that they can't win a World Series as currently constructed. Here are some reasons why I believe that the Astros can win a World Series with this team. Like, I'm not anti-trading for Trey Mancini. I'm not anti-trading for Josh Bell. I'm not anti-trading for Wilson Contreras. You give me any of those guys, I'd probably be pretty happy, depending on the nut, depending on the return that those guys would cost. But the Astros right now, third best odds to win the World Series. They have the third best record in all of baseball. Yeah, they haven't been very good offensively. I agree with that. They're below average in league in scoring runs, which is concerning. But I believe they also have the potential to be much better because you have three very good players that are all in the top 10 in WAR with Jeremy Peña, Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez, who many people consider one of the best offensive players in all of baseball. You give me one of those guys, your offense can be pretty good. I haven't even mentioned Jose Altuve, and you've had some struggles with players that you hope either A, improve, or you're looking to upgrade them before the deadline. But you can't, I guess, mention that in this conversation because I'm saying right now the Astros good enough to win the World Series. But here was John earlier today, Granato, on the bench, talking about this.
I have a problem with Jeremy. You're in the media. Don't be tweeting out that everything is fine. All is well here. All is fine here. Uh-uh. You, the Astros, see stuff like that and go, "Oh, we're okay. We're okay."
Wait, no. Come on. You don't think James Click cares what?
No. I think what, let's get away with as much as we possibly can and spend as little as we possibly can and see if we're okay.
Well, I think that is the Astros' way. I know that's not a popular sentiment. No one likes to be disrespectful to Jim Crane, but the fact is, I do think that's the case.
I do think that's the case, and I think that we need to keep putting the pressure on them to actually act and spend more money because the window is closing. If you need a center fielder by trade deadline, go get a damn center fielder.
So there's John. James Click's like in my DMs all the time. He's asking me my opinion. He's asking me what I think of expected results coming up. He's asking me where Alex Bregman should be in the batting order. He thinks what I think of Jose Altuve, if he's somebody that they should tinker with moving in the lineup. You know what else James Click did? Before he signed Yordan Alvarez, he DM'd me on Twitter, at Jeremy Branham, by the way. He DM'd me, and he said, "This is the offer that we have for Yordan Alvarez, 115 for 6 years. Do you think we should sign Yordan Alvarez to this deal? Do you think we should do this? Because we really care a lot about your opinion." And I said, "You know what, Jimmy? I think that's a great idea. I think you should sign Yordan Alvarez to $115 million for 6 years. It's a bargain, $17 million average annual value. It's a steal for one of the best young players in all of the game." So I agree with John. James Click comes to me whenever he needs advice on how to run the Houston Astros.
I think it's fantastic. I thought that he might go delve a little deeper and ask what the Hive thought, too, because he knows it's an educated audience that really is the crux of his fan base to understand if they would be accepting of moves from an overall perspective, when you know teams look for that, what is it? There's a certain measure of acceptability in marketing.
Sure,
and I can see that. I mean, I can see tapping in. You're a numbers guy too, so
yeah, he's a numbers that guy.
That synergy that's there gives you a little extra.
That's why we hit it off.
Yeah, it's not like Ben DuBose and Daryl Morey. This is like number to number. This is good stuff.
You know what else that Jim really liked about me is he saw me one day on our Twitch.tv/ESPN975 when I was wearing my Tampa Bay Rays hat to troll you.
Oh.
He saw that and he goes, "You know what? That's another thing that we have in common because I came from Tampa. You're wearing a Tampa Bay hat. So TB, JB, let's all get along."
So what? Are you responsible for Carlos Correa walking and finding out just how great Jeremy Peña is?
Yeah, he again DM'd me, and he's like, "Mr. Branham." He calls me Mr. Branham. I call him Jim. He calls me Mr. Branham. And he said, "Look, Carlos Correa, there's a lot of talk that he's going to get $300 million plus. Scott Boras and his agent, they want 10 years. We understand that there's a hashtag going around, and there's T-shirts, and there's signs, and there's all this stuff saying, hashtag pay the man. Do you think we should pay the man, Mr. Branham?" And I said, "You know what? No, you should. You should not pay the man. Because this Jeremy Peña kid, I like it not only because he's got a great first name, but I think that he's going to be very good at baseball. I think he might outproduce
Carlos Correa."
Didn't
you guys have a quarrel, though, at one point about trying to put a
James
dollar?
James and I?
Yeah. You guys were trying to put a dollar value on mound visits, and you guys didn't see eye to eye?
So James actually put more value in mound visits than I do. I think that they're vastly overrated. When Carlos Correa left in free agency, you might remember this, Blankers, but a lot of people around this city were saying, "You know what? I'm not sure the Astros will ever be able to replace the mound visits of Carlos Correa." And contrary to popular belief, James Click actually agreed. James Click actually is like, "You know what? I think that's Carlos Correa's best attribute. I think his best, not his bat, not his gold glove and whatever the other bronze.
Rocket arm?
His rocket arm, not his amazing good looks. None of that. Click actually agreed with the rest of the city. He agreed to people to talk behind the microphones. He said, "I think it's mound visits. How are we ever going to recover from that?" I said, "James, don't you worry. The Astros are going to be just fine. You got leadership other places. You can let the guy walk." Turned out all right.
Didn't you also say that there was a course being offered at U of H, even remotely now, on leadership characteristics through mound visits and other ways?
I'm actually the professor of that.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I teach that. Only online, though.
But you're giving him a deal for paying in the offseason.
Yeah, exactly. I think Granato, we obviously tongue-in-cheek here. I think Granato is giving me way too much credit to think that I am influencing the decisions of the Houston Astros because I believe that the Astros' offense, despite not being that high in runs per game, I understand that. But because they're the third best team in all of Major League Baseball, because they have the third best odds to win the World Series, three players in the top 10 in WAR, Yordan Alvarez, not breaking his hammock bone, is an absolute stud. Jose Altuve is the top second baseman still in the American League. They have an approach, Joel, that works very well. They don't strike out. In fact, the Astros, despite having not a very good offense right now, second fewest strikeouts in all of baseball. Contact. They see pitches. They make the other pitcher work. And again, they have the third best record in baseball. Don't panic. Don't panic about this Astros offense. If a move is there that makes sense, James Click will do it because he's aggressive. He showed us that he was aggressive last year. He saw a position of need last year in the bullpen. He went out and attacked that, brought in relievers. I believe he's going to bring in offense to this team. But I can guarantee you that it's not going to be because what I am tweeting and what I'm not tweeting.
I would. Obviously, that's the main thing. You know, you and I went back and forth, and I thought about the fact that I still think they need a 1-2 punch at the top of their rotation. You know, I've been adamant about the bullpen, and then we still have to address what the question marks are in this lineup. But you know, I understand. I also am open to understanding in the terms of a discussion the fact that look, when you're sitting where they're sitting, it's hard to say that they're lacking a whole lot in terms of being a team contending for a World Series championship. So it's all fun and games, but at the same time, realistically, when we look at this team, it goes back to what I said earlier in the show. Again, it's about the landscape, too. At a certain point, you're not measuring yourself anymore against the division. You're measuring yourself against the other best teams in baseball.
We've been saying that since April.
Yeah. So now, instead of watching what the Rangers do, you know, a week or two ago when they were possibly, you know, the second place team within reach, or what the Mariners were supposed to do at the start of the year.
Could the Rangers make it a sweat?
Now we're focusing on the fact that the Yankees and the Mets, with big series coming up, are going to be teams that we can measure some things about to see where you sit and if something else needs to be done.
Yeah, and look, this is even before, like, they can make a move. Because I don't think that, like, I'm not opposed to making a trade. I'm not just saying, no, James, don't do anything. Don't deplete the farm system more, which, I mean, is a concern. And last year, Click didn't trade from the farm, really. I mean, he traded Brian De La Cruz to Miami for Yimi Garcia, who was a fringe prospect. But he used more of the surplus of last year's roster, Miles Straw, Abraham Toro, to solidify the bullpen. And I think he's going to be trying to solidify the lineup this season. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, 4965 texting in. Pena has played terrible in the field. It looks like he's never played shortstop in his life, just saying.
That's not tongue-in-cheek?
I mean, he didn't put the slash
the
S, so I don't think he's being sarcastic there, because I didn't see the slash S. I mean, you can take a look, too. Your eyes are a little better than mine. You got your cheaters on over there. You could look to see if there's a slash S. I don't see one. I don't see a slash S.
Why we had to go to the cheaters.
My bad. Anyways, Pro Baseball Reference, they have this metric called defensive war, which is usually pretty accurate how, you know, shortstop might be playing defense. Jeremy Pena has the fifth best defensive war in the entire American League.
Terrible.
So I think that he's slightly, I could be wrong here, Blankers, you tell me. I think he's slightly better than terrible in the field.
Your dumbass actually thinks that. I mean,
you talking to me?
Awful. Yeah, he's just awful. I mean, get it straight. No, there's absolutely no S. I just verified with the readers on for you. Oh my god.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Clarence, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Clarence, how's your Monday going?
What's going on, gentlemen? How y'all doing?
What's up, buddy?
These next 2 weeks with the series with New York is going to tell a lot of what James Click and the Astros are actually going to do in terms of going and getting either offensive help, probably another catcher, get rid of Castro the Astro, you know, and make some moves, because this is these two teams right here, this is the upper echelon of what you're trying to measure what your team is going to be, being the Mets and the Yankees, and then
Clarence dropped out a little bit there, but we get the gist of the conversation.
Here's the thing, Clarence. The one thing, and everybody else, the one thing that you have to pay attention to that kind of relates back to even what Lance was indicating, which is they don't want publicly it to be known, but there is a good chance that this team has changed its focus financially and is not as willing to go out and spend like they once were when they were chasing their first championship.
I do not believe that for a second.
I just look at it and say you're going to play the two best teams money can buy along with the Dodgers. They're the three highest payrolls with the biggest salaries, with the teams that just continue to spend. You would hope that it behooves James Click to look at it and say, we don't have to get into that top three, but we have plenty of money to burn if we need to. And after this stretch of games, I should have a clearer understanding of what we still may need so that we can be in that upper echelon in October.
I have two other bones to pick with Granato. 713-780-ESPN.
You're going right at the Godfather today.
The cheap part and the window closing part. Hive, do you think the Astros are cheap? 713-780-ESPN. Hive, do you think the Astros window is closing? 713-780-3776. We'll discuss it on the other side. It's Killer Beast on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we're discussing the Astros and their offense and my ability to curry favor with James Click based on my tweets. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. A couple things Granato said there that I think are worthy of the conversation. The cheap thing with Crane. Look, this year's payroll, 10th in baseball. It's not where the Astros have normally been these last few years since 2017, where they've been at or near, and sometimes over when they traded for Greinke, of the competitive balance tax. So the Astros have always been right or near it. This offseason was kind of wacky, right? You had the lockout. You didn't know what the number was going to be. There was a flurry of spending before it,
right?
And then there was like a flurry of spending after it.
And you were in limbo because you didn't know what the Correa situation was going to be, right?
I think they had already made the decision in hindsight.
But what I'm saying is, because of the fact that he didn't go anywhere else, then we saw that low offer, whether they knew about it or not.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, because you were kind of leaving the door just a smidge open.
It wasn't low. It was short.
But what I'm saying is, from the standpoint of, you're not going to go out and sign a bunch of other people until he signs, because it's an awful look.
First domino to fall.
People are like, yeah, you're not trying. You weren't serious about Correa in the first place. And image matters in that regard.
Yeah. And then, like, if you were at least kicking the tires on Correa, I'm not sure that they were. I mean, we'll never really know that. Click said that, you know.
Until the book comes out.
Yeah.
We'll Somebody's see. Writing one.
But, I mean, even Correa was telling Jeremy Pena at the end of the offseason, this team is more likely, you know, most likely yours. So, I mean, the writing was on the wall there. But also, I didn't love the free agents that would go out there and sign. Like, did you want to sign Trevor Story to a nine-figure deal? I didn't. I made that very clear. So, I mean, free agency, you're going to overpay just in general. It's the nature of the beast. But I'm not going to call Jim Crane cheap whenever he's the one that bought the team from Drayton McClain. Like, you want cheap? Go look what Drayton McClain was doing with the Houston Astros. Like,
no,
we should be pretty
absolutely.
Thankful of what Crane is doing with the Stros. And again, the Stros have been at or near, and sometimes over, one time over, the competitive balance tax since they've been a contender in 2017. This is the one year they haven't. They've played a few months of this season. We're here on June 20th, where they're not at or near the competitive balance tax. They have time to get there before the August 2nd trade deadline, but even that's going to take a return. Like, I'm going to give the Astros the benefit of the doubt this year where their payroll is at because of the wackiness of the CBA and the lockout and the Correa situation, and I'm going to put more weight on 17 through 21 when the Astros were spending money very competitively.
So here's the thing. I think that the evaluation, just like the results, are weighed on a year-to-year basis. And we know he wasn't Drayton, and he went out and did what he had to do from pulling the trigger and opening his checkbook for Verlander the first year to making other subsequent moves that had to be made to give them a chance in years after that. Now you look at it, this is a totally different year because you also realize teams are able to turn the page and realize our window has shut. You know what? We could be good, not great. We're not there yet. And they're still evaluating that. So at the same time, I was very quick to tell you at the start of the season with all the variables you brought into it with the short preseason and the fact that, you know, we were paused for a while with the lockout. Look, I want them to spend the money. They don't have to do it before the start of the season, but I want them to do something and do whatever, you know, a couple of moves or whatever it takes to be as competitive as possible between now and the trade deadline. And that's still possible to do.
Yeah.
But it also means weighing the rest of the landscape that I keep going back to, too. If you were coasting as the one seed, you had the same kind of lead that you have in the division in the overall American League, you might see a different Jim Crane no matter what. But because of the fact that you're still weighing your options by kind of evaluating your team in the league, there's no hurry right now.
No, there's no rush. And I think it's also like people are texting in saying that 713-780 of ESPN, if you want to get in, by the way, 0997. I don't think that they're cheap because those mega contracts never work out from the team's perspective. And that's something that we've talked about all off season, that huge contracts almost never work out, especially when those contracts go into the player's mid-30s. Like Carlos Correa's wasn't that, but he signed a huge, huge average annual value, the biggest ever given to a position player in history. And then they're saying, well, they still should have signed George Springer. Like, it's very easy to look at the season that George Springer is having this year and be like, oh, yeah, the Astros should have signed George Springer. But George Springer is also in the second year of a six-year deal, and George Springer's already in his 30s, right? He's 32 years old. So we're talking about a George Springer at the end of the contract that's going to be 36 years old. And let's not forget that if you were to grade George Springer's contract after one season, let's just look at one season alone, average annual $25 million. He signed 6 years, $150. This year it looks great. This year through 61 games, it looks fantastic. You know how many games George Springer played in last year at $25 million per year? Dude played 78 games. George Springer has had a history of injuries. Why would you have paid a guy $150 million for six seasons and $25 million a year to play half the season? That makes no sense whatsoever.
No, look, and the fact that at his age, the money he was trying to make, and I'm one of the people that firmly believe he was trying to make up for lost money of the past as well, it just was never going to make sense, and it didn't fit the narrative of what the new Astros management was all about, which is not overspending, not going long-term, not going max dollars. Correa said the same thing. He basically told us what we already knew when he came out after the season started and they didn't get a deal done, saying, they told me, and they, you can only assume, is Crane and Click, told me they're not in it for the long-term big money deals. So that told you already all what you needed to know. The writing was already clearly on the wall with a neon sign.
Mm-hmm.
You were still hopeful. You thought that maybe whether it be the hometown discount and him wanting to stay and keep a good thing going, or Daniela's ties to the city or whatever everybody brought up as possibilities, the door was still left cracked open just a touch. But realistically, once you saw the writing on the wall, you already knew what the end result was going to be.
And one of the things, too, when Correa left was like, okay, well, the fear factor of not knowing what Jeremy Peña was, which I understand that fear. And in fact, whenever that short-term deal came out, I have a huge average annual, I thought that the Astros should have made that short-term deal. I've been proven wrong. Like, they made the right decision, what Jeremy Peña has shown you. And Carlos Correa has been better lately since he came off the IL. But still, would you rather play Carlos Correa at 35.1 or Jeremy Peña at the league minimum? So the Astros made a wise decision there, even if you take the dollars out of the equation. 713-780-3776.
Can I ask you a quick question? It's just kind of random from what you just said. But if we firmly believe, because they got it so right, and from a talent evaluation, they nailed Jeremy Peña when a lot of people had doubts and didn't even think he should have been the starter to start the season, does that mean that you also believe their evaluations on other players should be as spot on? And I get it's a player by player, you know, every guy's different.
Yeah.
But if they were so adamant about it, like a Jake Meyers, that they got rid of Miles Straw, and they basically, and even when we hear Click talk on other stations, when he talks about the fact that he is our future, he is a part of our plan, he's part of our future, can you start being left to assume, hey, if they nailed it with Peña and they know how to evaluate talent, there shouldn't be any reason, a whole lot of reason for me to want to doubt that Jake Meyers is the starting center fielder of the future for the Houston Astros. So I don't have to go out and trade for one.
I mean, we need to know the next 6 weeks because we don't know. I mean, he might make a move for a center fielder in the next 6 weeks. I think that their player evaluation is sound. I think it's good. They hit it with Jeremy Peña. Whenever they re-signed Yuli Gurriel 2 years ago, I hated it. I was like, why are they signing this washed-up Yuli Gurriel? And then it's like, oh, okay, he won a gold glove and won a batting title. Brantley had a very good year last year after they thought he was long in the tooth and maybe didn't want
to. Still having a good year this year.
Still having a very good year. 713-780-ESPN. That is ridiculous. He, not Springer, not injured this year. You're projecting him to play half a season going forward? Yeah, I am. George Springer, throughout his major league career, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, he's played 8 seasons. Let's just throw out the rookie year, too. Let's throw out the rookie year when he came up in 2014, because I don't remember when he came up in 14. I don't think he started opening day. I could be wrong on that, but since I don't know, I'll throw the rookie year out of the equation. So let's look at years 2 through 7 for George Springer. So we're looking at years 2 through 7 for George Springer. You had the COVID year thrown in there as well. George Springer plays on average less than 120 games per year. There's 162 games over a regular season. So you're paying high money and full value, actually over full value, for a player who misses almost a quarter of the season. Yeah, I am projecting George Springer, who's now in his 30s and is going to get older and older by the day, to be somebody who misses time because of injury. I think that's a safe projection to make. The other bone that I wanted to pick real quick is the window closing with the Houston Astros. Yordan Alvarez is one of the best hitters in all of baseball. Kyle Tucker's top 10 in offensive war in the American League, very young, in his mid-20s. Jeremy Peña, who is a rookie, is in the top 10 in offensive and just overall war in the American League. You have a young pitching staff who is under team control for quite some time. Jose Altuve, still a very high-level player and the best second baseman in the American League, who is under contract as well. You have some pieces around them if you want to throw them in there as well. The Astros window is not closing. The core four window that we talk about with Altuve and Yuli and Springer and Correa, and if you want to throw in Bregman in the mix there too, are those players aging and starting to regress a bit? Yes. But the Astros have a new core that is outstanding.
Not denying any of that, right? I'm not trying to push back on any of that, but it depends on what your expectations for that window being open are. If it's to win the division and get to the playoffs, it's not closing. But where it relates to the conversation that we just had, it's how willing are the Astros going to be to go continuously year after year to fortify and supplement the rest of this roster where it need be, right? Because the way you compete with the Dodgers and the Yankees and now seemingly the Mets is you take those core elements you're talking about in this new generation, but you go out and fortify them on a year-to-year basis with the money, with the extensions, with the dollars that say it makes sense for me because I don't think winning the division's enough. Or is it more that Click has and Crane have the ability to scale it back and go, we're not going to spend like this every year, and it's time for us to kind of pull back on the spending. well, then maybe it's a different window that's open. It may open it up for you to get in. It doesn't open it up for you to get all the way to the World Series.
He also spent $50 million on a pitcher who's pitched once in the last 2 years and was 38 years old coming off Tommy John.
Sure he did.
$50 million.
And part of that was a personal relationship as well, and paying off, right? But now it's how do you do it the rest of the way and to fortify other pieces? Because you also have the challenge of you better hope Alex Bregman snaps out of this because you're paying him a pretty penny for multiple years coming up. And you need more production from him, and you've got to make some other decisions to see what you could do to fortify while also balancing what's on the books that maybe you like and maybe you don't.
That's also part of baseball.
Sure,
like you're going to spend money on players that don't work out. I mean, that's why I don't like signing free agents to big mega deals into their 30s. And maybe Alex Bregman's going to be that type of player, which was Jeff Luhnow's contract extension before Click. Not that I wouldn't have done it. It's just that Bregman's not lived up to that contract. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It is NBA draft week coming up on Thursday. Rockets have 3 picks in the first round, as high as number 3. Let's start taking a look at some of the possibilities, and we'll go worst-case scenario for the Houston Rockets. We'll look at one player, highlight one of them each of the next 4 days. We'll look at worst-case next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. But first, I want to tell you, speaking of the season, a moment on Pro Dunk Hoops. Look, everybody's in the mood to play basketball at all times. You have the playoffs that are going on. You have March Madness going on in March. And right now you have the draft season. So you always want to work on your game. Whether it's your kid, maybe you just want to go play a little one-on-one. And if you're going to do that, you need the best basketball goal on the market. You need a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. Tempered glass backboard gives you a true feel. Adjustable goal so you can work on every part of the game. Have some fun. Lower it down. Throw down some jams. Or if you want to work on your shot, raise it up to regulation. You can do that as well. If you are throwing down some dunks, they have competition-grade breakaway rims that's perfect for dunking. Hanging keeps you safe. They also have an extended overhang, which keeps a clear path under the rim. I don't have to worry about rolling my ankle in a basketball stanchion because of that extended overhang. Durability, also a strength of Pro Dunk Hoops. If you're going to be doing it in Houston for so long, you have to be durable, and they do that with their stainless steel fasteners. They're thicker steel, and of course, their exclusive rust armor, which makes them sturdy and strong and unlike anything else you'll find in the big box stores. Something else you won't find in the big box stores, somebody willing to install the goal for you. Yes, the pros at Pro Dunk Hoops will professionally install your goal perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't lift a finger. Let the pros at Pro Dunk Hoops do all of the work for you. They come in a variety of sizes and options. That'll be the perfect fit for your driveway or yard. Call 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Warrior sound!
Real. Fun. Sports. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
NBA draft coming up on Thursday. Houston Rockets with Jalen Green. Kevin Porter Jr., part of the future?
I'll tell you what, it is a big question mark. And it is, as much as we've seen make or break seasons and prove it seasons between Carlos Correa, Davis Mills, and others in this town, this is a big prove it season for KPJ. And I keep telling you guys, there is so much more that as it relates to off the basketball floor that's going into this. And so much more that has to be sorted out that it is going to be very interesting. And if they do choose to move on from him, and or as we were talking to Sam Amico about this, and or move on from him, it will be a very rude awakening for this fan base, who really a lot of them believe, a majority of them I think believe, is part of that Jalen Green-tied future of youth that's going to be here and blossom and flourish. And I don't think they realize how fine of a line it is between him staying and going between now and the end of this season.
Yeah, I'm not willing to – look, I think you're hopeful that he can be and that you're hoping for the best in that regard. But if I'm looking at this current roster, not looking at draft picks yet, Jalen Green, obviously, he's the figurehead of this rebuild. I would put Alpi Şengün in that conversation.
I was interested. 2?
Yeah.
Over KPJ?
Yeah, see, I don't know if I believe KPJ long term. Like, if he had something go haywire next year and the Rockets got rid of him because of that, would it shock you?
It wouldn't shock me personally. Exactly. I know too much. Yeah. But I would say this, Jeremy. The line in the sand is, I believe wholeheartedly in his basketball abilities.
But I do too, not as a point guard, though.
And I agree with that, too. But I believe his basketball abilities alone and the level of talent that he possesses should be enough that most teams, if that's all they were dealing with, would keep this kid and say, I got to roll with this kid for multiple years. He's too good to pass up. But because of the off the floor, because of the continuing and still continuing issues that are there lingering and kind of just hovering, I think that at a certain point, you have to weigh the good versus the bad, the productivity on the basketball court versus that volatile side that you don't know when that ticking time bomb is going to go off again, and go, I got too many kids are being influenced by what he does and too many teammates. I can't keep going with him on the floor and as a member of this team when I know what's going on off the floor could be so detrimental to this franchise.
It depends on who you listen to, too, because a lot of folks think that a lot of players really enjoy playing with him and like him. But it is something that you have to worry about. So, I mean, ideally, I would love KPJ to be part of the, you know, long-term rebuild for the Rockets. I really want KPJ and Jalen Green to be my wings and to find a really good point guard. But the NBA draft coming up on Thursday, I think that the Rockets will be adding their second-best piece because I think the number three pick will be slightly higher than KPJ, and I think it will be higher than Şengün as well, next to Jalen Green. Like, if you're having a two-headed monster, it would be Jalen Green and whoever you draft at number three. What do you think is the worst possible scenario, though, for the Houston Rockets at number three? Because, look, we got 4 days to the draft.
I know who it is.
We have 4 days to the draft. We're going to look at one prospect each day, and I think we should start it with the worst-case scenario because it's a question I've been wanting to ask you. What do you think is the worst-case scenario for the Houston Rockets?
I think it's Jaden Ivey. I think the fact that, especially now that you made the moves that you made to get rid of the guy that was going to take the majority of the minutes at the power forward position away, you basically pigeonholed yourself into where you need to take one of those three big guys sitting at the top of the draft. If somehow, some way, or they just decided with a wild hair to go and look Ivy's direction as opposed to any one of those three, regardless of what the potential of each guy is.
He met with the Rockets, he said today.
That is a scary proposition if you are a Rockets fan.
That's to me as well. Jaden Ivey is the worst case scenario because whenever the Rockets, we were talking about this before the draft lottery. Like, would you live with number three if I told you you could get number three right now? And the conversation was, yeah, we could live with number three because you know you're getting either Jabari, you're getting either Chet, you're getting Banchero. You're guaranteed one of those three players. And I know that Ivey has a lot of passionate fans. They're in love with his athleticism, which it does exist. I mean, his athleticism, like, it would be pretty close to elite NBA athleticism. Mm-hmm. But when you look at his play, like, he's listed as a point guard, shooting guard. He's not a point guard. He's not going to be the distributor of your offense. He's not going to be the facilitator of your offense. His handle is, like, all right, but it's not really good NBA point guard handle as well. Like, it's more of a catch and try to create off the dribble as opposed to bringing it up down the floor and beating somebody off the dribble. Usually he's beating people with his athleticism. And then when you watch Ivy as well, one of the things, and I know his shooting numbers got way better in his sophomore season than his freshman season at Purdue, he still has some moments where he misses shots badly. Like, I'm not talking about, like, clanking it off the iron. I'm talking about missing the iron entirely on a wide-open shot where he's, like, clanking it off the side of the backboard.
I'm going to give you another one. I'm going to give you another one because we just got done talking about it as it relates to KPJ.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a guy that's gone back at his head coach. He's also a guy that's quit on his team when either he didn't get the ball or his shot wasn't falling and basically said, it's about him, not about them. And that's the picture that he wanted to paint. Mm-hmm. And though he tried to bounce back from that, you can't forget those moments. And as an NBA team, especially when you know coming in, you're not going to be the man. And in this case, you've already got a guy that's in position A. You're hoping to be position B. So when you look at that and say, the last thing you need is another kid that's in the locker room that's going to have volatile feelings and is not afraid to quit on the team and say, screw you to the coach.
See, I don't think he's going to be able to create his own shot either. Like, that's even like the off-the-court stuff, which is obviously a red flag, especially when he's not considered a top-three prospect. Like, we're talking about this relative to where the Houston Rockets are standing. You already have two wings if you're keeping KPJ around, too. So now you're talking about it from a minute perspective, although some people want to pigeonhole KPJ into the point guard spot. I don't love the
idea. I merely bring it up because that's now becoming a hot factor when you evaluate talent. As much as it's
especially
how much
it's a reach.
It's how much you love the game and then how much you're going to be compatible and be a good teammate and a good locker room guy character-wise, not just what you can do with a basketball in your hand.
I haven't heard anything in terms of the love of the game. Like his,
I haven't either.
His mom, I believe, is the head coach at Notre Dame.
Yes, I
think
I
she's
that's
the Notre
right.
Dame women's basketball
assistant,
coach.
Maybe. Is it head?
No, I think she took over for Muffet.
Oh, she did.
I think she took over for Muffet McGraw, if I remember correctly. One of the other, like, if we're also talking, because I think Ivy's going to be a player in the NBA. Like, I don't think he's going to be a bust. I don't think he's going to, like, you know, be out of the league in 3 years because his athleticism does play. I think he will be able at some point to knock down a wide open 3-point shot. Honestly, I think he's going to be kind of a 3-and-D guy. Like, I don't see him being a 20-point per game scorer. I don't see where the offense is going to run through him. I don't see him being the best offensive player of an NBA team. And if he wants to be very good defensively, I think he can become very good defensively.
But here's where that other factor relates to. He thinks he is, and he thinks he's a shooter, and he thinks he's going to be that guy. So when he's not, and you have to have the discussion with him that he shouldn't be, that's going to be a problem.
See, I just don't see his spot where he gets to his shots. Like, can he rise and fire over a lot of collegiate players? Yeah, he can because he's got great leaping ability. But at 6'4", compared to NBA athletes, I'm not sure that's going to be there for him. And he's not going to beat you off the dribble where he's creating space and pull up on you and knock down, you know, an 18-footer. He's not going to beat you off the dribble where he's creating his own three. He's also got a very slow release. Like, the best way for him to score is attacking the rim. And, like, if I'm looking at, like, somebody that I'm going to invest the number three pick in, I don't want that to be the only way that
you're scoring. No, you and I are talking about this for weeks now where, look, everybody that comes into the NBA is athletic. They have skill. You know, a lot of them have size and length. It's just who can maximize it to separate themselves from everybody else. Who has that one skill or two skills or more complete game that takes them to another level so that they can show it out on the NBA level? Because otherwise, you get lost in the shuffle, and sooner or later, you're out of the league.
2662 saying, who is y'all's current player comp to Jaden Ivey? I haven't thought of a very good one. I heard him mentioned early in this whole, like in the college basketball season, is John Morant. I'm like, no
way.
He's not John Morant. He doesn't have the handles of John Morant, and I don't think he has the streaky scoring of John Morant.
I don't think he has the hops of John Morant. No one does, really.
Probably not, but he can get up there. His best skills are athleticism, and he's got some hops. NBA Draft Net says Anthony Edwards and Donovan Mitchell. He is not the scorer as those two guys.
No,
I think he's going to be a 3-and-D guy when it's all said and done, if I'm being completely honest. A 3-and-D who can also get to the rim and like throw down a hammer dunk whenever the avenue and the lane is there to present itself. I really don't think he's going
to
be a great NBA player.
I'm trying to think of like best case scenario. I'll tell you the first guy that came to mind. If it's just best case scenario, it's Zach LaVine when he came in the league. Because Zach LaVine could fly.
Yeah.
Zach LaVine was athletic. But Zach LaVine, if you remember, came into the league and he wasn't a great shooter.
It took him a while to become a scorer.
But he made himself a great shooter and scorer.
That's not a bad comp.
But it took a lot of years.
But also, the LaVine has a little point guard to him where I don't think Ivy does.
Okay.
So I like that comp. I don't think he's going to be as good a ball handler, though.
I would agree with that.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll do this with the other draft prospects each and every day heading into the NBA draft at 2:30. You have to be checking in tomorrow to see who we profile tomorrow. All right, coming up next, money the same. We get rid of the money aspect this time. Would you rather win a Super Bowl or make the Hall of Fame? And is the Astros good enough right now to win the World Series? We discuss it next with one of the Wheelhouse Men. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, Corey's not only the owner, he's the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association, which means he has the trust and the belief of his peers that he knows the business better than most and he can do the job that needs to be done. He does the same thing with Fitz Roofing, and that's where you benefit and that's where you come in. Because if you got an issue, you don't care what they've done for everybody else. You care what they can do for you. And here's the things they can do for you. They use the best products in the business, starting with CertainTeed shingles. They have the best ratings in the business, which is so important. From Facebook to Facebook to Home Advisor, they're going to make sure that they are the top of the chain for you in terms of the ratings that they can give you. And they do the job right with the best customer service and the best warranties. That's what you're looking for. You don't need storm chasers, deposit thieves, companies that come in, get the money up front, and then you can't find them. You can't get them to finish the job. And if they do, they don't do it right. And you can't get them to come back and fix what you need done. That's the problem. That's why Fitz is so good and so many people talk about them, because they take care of you every step of the way. And it starts with whatever's going on with your house, your roof, or whatever. From home repairs, roof repairs, a new roof, or something done like a fence in your yard, they can take care of you. Go to fitzroofing.com, check out the website and all the ways they can help you. But if you got something pressing that you need them to look at, it's as simple as a phone call. You call 832-521-3001. They're going to come to you to do what they do, And they're going to tell you exactly how they can help. It costs you absolutely nothing. And nothing says you got to go with them. But if you choose to go with them after what they tell you they can do and how they can help, you're going to get the best in the business, and it is second to none. And they're going to take care of you every step of the way. That's why I love that, because a lot of people call, a lot of other companies charge a service fee to show up and just tell you how much money they would take from you to do the job and fix the problem. Fitch doesn't do it that way. They don't believe you lock in with them till you believe they can do what they said they're going to do. So they're going to just come out, give you an estimate, it costs you nothing, and then let you decide. If you decide, like so many others, to go with them, you're going to get a company that's going to be dedicated to you, and that's what you need at the end of the day. FitzRoofing.com, and call them for that free no-obligation inspection, 832-521-3001. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
ESPN 97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Cody Stutes hanging out with us. How was your weekend, Cody?
It was very good. I went to Booker T's Reality Wrestling Fantasy Camp on Saturday.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
They put you through the ringer?
Oh, yeah. I'm still feeling it. I'm still feeling it 2 days later. I'm hurting.
Did you have you ever done any sort of wrestling before?
I had never been in a professional wrestling ring ever.
So were you doing like bumps and like having to lay on your back? And...
Yeah, so they start you out with kind of like just cardio to kind of get you used to the rigors of running around.
Bouncing off the rope?
Yeah, bouncing off the rope. I got a bruise on my back.
From the rope?
From the rope.
Wow.
That stuff's just steel cables wrapped in plastic.
No, it's not real.
It's what do you mean?
That's not. That's fake. It's all fake. Yeah.
And or tights?
No. You just wore workout clothes.
What's going to be your wrestling name?
Well, here's the thing. After one day of Reality Wrestling Fantasy Camp, there's not a professional wrestling future for me.
You hung up the boots?
Oh, no.
Stutes' boots are done?
I have a whole, I like professional wrestling, but I have a whole new level of respect for those people.
I thought you were going to go stump in a mud hole in people.
No.
Boots were made for walking? Done?
I'm trying to think about how many. So I took two. They call it flat back bumps. I took two flat back bumps. I rattled my own brain on the second one because I didn't tuck my chin enough.
Wait, flat? What is a flat back
you
bump?
You landed on your back.
In your back. And
but
then
how? From what? Just standing up the flat back, not off the ropes or anything?
The way you do it is you act like the rug got pulled out from under you. Yeah. So you fly back.
Okay.
You got to leave your feet to do
and
it
you
right.
Just go, bah!
Yeah, no, that stuff hurts. Okay, and the second one I did, I rattled the cage and I was like a little woozy. I was like, oh no. And then
really?
Later they finished after we did all like the exercises and stuff like that. By the way, I'm gassed after the warm up. Like the warm up was no joke. It was 200 air squats and 50 burpees, and I was gassed. There was one dude tapped out like 10 minutes in.
Really?
He's like, "I'm out of here."
How many people were there?
About 20, I think.
Okay,
but close to that.
I don't believe any
of
that. None of that's real.
And so then we finished with they let the trainers body slam us, which was pretty cool. I got some platitudes from Booker T though on a couple of different things that
so
I did.
So did you lean into the body slam? Like, did you have to jump a little bit?
So
to help
that's
them out?
That's the thing is you've got to get light is what they call it. And so you help
kind of leave your feet and lead in.
Yeah, you help them by throwing your body up into the air and
give a little momentum.
Booker T was quick to point out that the biggest fella there, which was me, got the lightest of anybody for the body slams. So I was pretty happy about that. He also said that I had a perfect headlock. So you better watch out, Jeremy. You keep with these bad takes, I'm going to put you in a perfect headlock.
I can't believe you retired,
it's
though.
It's just sports,
you
Cody.
Lift the boots.
It's just a discussion. It shouldn't be taken personally.
I mean, I cannot say enough about I had tremendous respect for professional wrestlers for the amount of times that they perform over the course of a year.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it in that environment, I don't know how they do
it. I've always said, no matter how much you say it's for entertainment purposes, when they go and break a card table or they do it where it's not on the map
you still
proper,
feel it.
You have to feel that.
Did they teach you how to blade?
No. There's no blood. There's no blood.
Oh, that's too bad. Anyways, we were talking about this earlier. If the money was the same, let's take money out of it.
Okay.
We're just assuming that it's the exact same either way. Would you rather win a Super Bowl or make the NFL Hall of Fame?
Ooh. I hear so many of these players talk about the brotherhood of the NFL Hall of Fame and the gold jackets and the events that you get invited to for the rest of your life, and you can always put HOF next to your name. So I understand that element. I also got to think that the 100 or so people involved. It's probably more than that, but the 100 or so people involved on a team that win a championship got to have sort of that lifetime brotherhood too. I guess my thing would be you could be on a Super Bowl team and not be an integral part of the team, whereas if you're a Hall of Famer, at some point you are an integral part to multiple teams throughout the course.
Plus, you've earned the respect of a whole league during an era of the sport that says you could play.
Yeah, I mean, in a given decade, what do you have to be at your position for like a 10-year span to be a Hall of Famer? Like, you have to consistently be one of the 5, 7, 10 best players at your position every year, depending on what the position is. Like, that's a pretty sweet career that
like
you can
Patrick
hang your
head Ewing on. And Charles Barkley never won a title, but they're always going to be synonymous with greatness in the NBA over an extended period of time. I think that's where you validated a career where some people say, I need a ring to validate my career. I think you need a ring to validate you were part of a team. You need a Hall of Fame resume. You get in the Hall of Fame, you validated a career as one of the best of all time.
I also wonder, too, if maybe from a football perspective, if the barrier to entry for like the totality of your career is a lot lower. Like if Aaron Donald called it a career, Aaron Donald would be a Hall of Famer eventually. J.J. Watt called it a career. He'd be a Hall of Famer eventually. Donald obviously has the Super Bowl ring now. Watt doesn't. Like, how much really more could J.J. Watt do to improve the Hall of Fame candidacy? Like, he can. He's a Hall of Famer. Like, at that point in his career, he's kind of like in that weird flux where he could really use a Super Bowl ring to kind of put that totality of the career over the edge. But if I was – I think the position matters, too. Like, if you're one of the greatest safeties of all time, maybe I go ring. You're one of the greatest wide receivers, quarterbacks, running backs
of all
time.
You're the damn best long snapper, Cody, because you want a ring, but you're not going to the Hall of Fame for being a long snapper.
Sure, sure, yeah. It's, you know, it's tough. I'd probably take the jacket. I'll probably take the jacket.
That's what I think, and we took money out of it. But from the standpoint of notoriety, too, so many more doors are going to open for the rest of your life being a Hall of Fame athlete, whether you want a title or not, as opposed to literally you could be the backup quarterback or the holder on field goal kicks that gets a ring.
I think what a Hall of Fame career says about you is for however long you played, you could go to work and everybody in the building could depend on you to do your job the best at your position for a good stretch of the time that you were in the building. And I think that's something that's super important as opposed to being, hey, you know, he made like 4 tackles in the middle of the season. That was really good. And then he played special teams in the Super Bowl. Like, oh, yeah, he's got a ring. That's cool.
It would also say they are both very selfish. Y'all both want individual accolade instead of doing what is best for the team to help your teammates around you, every other guy in the room, to win a ring.
What if you never played? You were just on
the
roster.
I mean, if we're talking about money's the same between Hall of Fame career and a Super Bowl ring, I'm assuming that you're probably a pretty good player either way.
Well, if I have gotten a gold jacket, I've helped a lot of teammates and a lot of teams in that manner.
But you didn't help them win a ring. Oh. You did everything but win a ring.
But like I said, maybe you went up against Michael Jordan. Maybe you did your very best and you had one hell of a good team. But every year you ran into a buzzsaw anomaly like Michael Jordan.
So is that going to make your team feel better?
So you'd rather be Oboe Okoronkwo than J.J. Watt?
No. You're reaching here. You're moving the goalpost here.
No, like Oboe's got a ring. J.J. Watt's
going
to have a
gold jacket. We're assuming money is the same. So if assuming money is the same,
let's take money
we're probably
out of
looking. Well, that's
would
an obvious answer.
Oboe Okoronkwo? I'd rather be a ring.
But you moved the goalpost there because you took money out of it.
Money out of it. That was your argument, though, right?
No. The money's the same. That was the question. The money's the same. You took the money out of it.
Mm. So regardless of money's in it or not, we take it out of the equation.
Wait, so money's not in it. It's
obvious. Who's the greedy person? You just answered with the monetary answer.
Cody, monetary was never part of the question until you changed it.
We changed the conversation, though.
Well, if it's money is now in play, I'm taking the Hall of Fame. Yeah, I'm greedy, and yeah, I'm selfish. I got a family to support, for goodness sakes.
Well, then you can't call us greedy and selfish.
I can because you changed the question.
I just think when you look back at what you did, whether it's what we do or what anybody does, you want the people to look back to say, he was one of the greatest to ever do it. And I think to your point, Cody, it means you not only just did your job, but you influenced how you interacted on a daily basis with others. Otherwise, from a voting perspective, we know politically they could keep you out.
Yeah.
So that means that you could be the best firefighter, one of the best firefighters in the history. But people are going to talk about you for decades because you were that dude, as opposed to going, you know what, I walked into ladder number 9 and we put out a massive fire one day and we got all the credit, but what did I really do?
I just wonder who brings more joy, a Hall of Famer or a guy who has one ring?
To who?
I'm talking about just in general in their life. Who brings more joy?
Or who gets more joy?
I think the Hall of Famer gets
more joy. I absolutely agree. That's what I'm saying. I think you can say you got personal joy because you got a Super Bowl ring.
You remember probably the first five or six guys off the Super Bowl roster.
I care way too much about my teammates in the locker room than to worry about my gold jacket.
Every time you make that face, I know you're fully, you know what.
I want to give my teammates success, and I want them to taste the victory. I don't care about myself. I care about my teammates and my colleagues.
This is a loaded question, though, because the Hall of Fame answer is at the conclusion of a career that's already been played and we know is not a championship. Whereas you could win the ring early on and then still keep playing.
You keep trying to change the question. No, you keep trying to mold it.
I'm critical of the parameters of which you've put this question in, making it unanswerable.
Okay. Astros offense, do you think it's good enough to win a World Series right now?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Third best odds in all of baseball to win the World Series. You're telling Vegas they're fools? Say.
Watch the games, nerds. That's all numbers.
Vegas are nerds, you think?
Nerds. Watch the games.
He's feisty. He always fires you up.
I'm not fired up. He's fired up.
I think he's upset with that bruise he's got on the back of his back.
See,
the
Jeremy,
back of his back.
Just when you think you have all the answers, I change the question.
Was Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
It was on the tip of my tongue. I couldn't remember if it was Roddy or Rhodes, but yeah, it was Roddy. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse?
Trey Wingo's going to join us at 4:30. Davis Mills
He's joining you?
Trey Wingo's going to 4:30. I was going to say Davis Mills has every opportunity to be the starter in 2023, even if he doesn't blow you away in 2022, and I'll tell you why.
Ooh. That sounds like
that's such a salty tease.
I think we're going to steal that segment tomorrow. All right, Brendan, thanks so much for all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Brandon. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.